You can see Ben Moran Mull. You can see Donegal, which is a different country, which I always find bonkers.
Hello, my name's Ellen, and my blind dog Jed and I are walking the Kintyre Way. The walk covers 100 miles across the Kintyre Peninsula, taking in beaches, forestry, moors and ancient woodland, and promises heart-swelling views for me and mind-blowing smells for Jed. This podcast will take you through the walk section by section, including conversations along the way. Details of the walk, accommodation, transport, maps and step-by-step guides can be found at thekintyreway.com. This episode is sponsored by the Wayfarers in recognition of the time and effort that is given by the volunteers who make it possible. Thank you to all. Section 7, South End to Macrahanish. Distance 16 miles, allow 7 to 9 hours, suitable for walking and running. This part of the route is not so great for cycling. We start in South End, where immediately there are a couple of brief and easy diversions, and one slightly further one.
We've just got out the car park in South End. We're doing this section sort of a little bit back to front and roundabout, but we are here today to do a small amount of the section, but also to see St. Columba's footprints and where we are now, Heel Caves. Back to my handy notes, St. Columba, who we'll hear about in a minute, is said to have been a guest in the natural bolt hole, and the caves have housed many inhabitants, including, according to the 1881 census reports, a family of seven. The Piper's Cave, I'm not going in the caves because I'm a little bit scared of caves. For no apparent reason, I just think that at any point they could collapse upon you, which of course is absolute nonsense. They've been here for hundreds of years. Anyway, the Piper's Cave, which is the one that I'm standing outside right now, peering into, may have been less popular, as it is said that you can still hear the ghost of a bagpiper playing lonely tunes into the night. I can imagine being a bit freaked out in the middle of the night. I'm hearing that piper. Right, we're going to head to the footprints now. We are walking up to St. Columba's footprints. Got my handy notes here, which say that St. Columba first set sandals in Scotland in 563 AD in Dunaverty. That's where we are now. Believers and non-believers alike make the pilgrimage to the ivy-cloaked ruins of St. Columba's Chapel, though it was probably built long after his death. St. Columba's footprints are two... Here we go. Oh, right. St. Columba's footprints are two human footprints, which, I mean, they kind of both look like right feet to me, known as... Oh, man. Petrosomatoglyphs. One is a whimsical work of art created by a local stonemason in 1856. The other, the one closer to the sea, so there's one sort of pointing kind of parallel to the land and then there's one pointing out to sea, is reassuringly ancient, although some suggest it may have been designed for use in the coronations of the kings of Dalriada. Beyond the footprints of St. Columba is the St. Columba's Well. Right, we'll just walk down there. I think we passed it on the way up. Oh, dead boy. If you can hear the seagulls in the background. Quite a seagull heavy morning today. Good boy, this way. Yeah. Right, Jed's having a drink out of St. Columba's Well. Which is good, because apparently it is said to have divine healing powers. There you go, Jed. That'd be good, because this old dog's mortality is starting to show, which is unimaginable, of course. So what have I got to say about St. Columba's Well? A bowl carved into rock where water from a natural spring is reputed to have divine healing powers. Yep. Done. Right. Jed's immortal now. We are going to head along this section of the Kintyre Way.
A slightly further excursion off the way takes you to the Mull of Kintyre Lighthouse. There's been a lighthouse here since 1788, and the current beacon, built by Robert Stevenson, has been automated since 1996. The dizzyingly steep jaunt down is fine for the fit and enthusiastic. The clamber back up is for the formerly fit and now not so enthusiastic. After navigating a series of hairpin bends, the lighthouse looms into view below, appearing to be almost at sea level, yet actually perched atop 300-foot cliffs. From here, island is around a dozen miles yonder, and on a sunny Kintyre day, you can make out the bold mountains and the green glens of Antrim. Take note from the lighthouse keeper, who built protective dry stone walls here to shelter his precious runner beans. Even on the brightest summer's day, the wind can pick up very quickly, and of course the mist really does roll in from the sea. The next section follows a small road for some miles, giving easy walking conditions, with views inland and out to sea. The track comes off the road to bring you into the boundary of Lagibarn Wildlife Reserve. The climb is steady, but quite steep in some sections, up good tracks and across fields with a short section through woodland, and then opening out to the most wonderful reveal of the coast, the sea below, and on a clear day it looks like Northern Ireland is just a short splash away. Keep your eye out in Lagibarn for various interesting flora and fauna. There's a bit of a steep section, so I broke up the walk and left Jed at home for a bit of it. Jimmy MacDonald was kind enough to walk up Lagibarn with me to discuss some of the wildlife that we could see up there.
Right, we've swapped Jed out again for another dog. This is Milo. Milo! Hello, baby! Yeah, Milo. It's Kelpie Cross.
Yeah, that is.
And I'm here with Jimmy MacDonald, who is a bit of a bird expert, having walked the Kintyre Way, man and boy. Right, we're just leaving the road now to head up to Lagibarn. This is an area that you're pretty familiar with, isn't it?
Yeah, Lagibarn's somewhere I've been going since I was probably 7 or 8 years old. First taken
so,
out there.
So 10 years, 10 or 10.
Yeah, at least. At least 10 years. Taken out there as a small boy by Angus Martin. Angus was my next door neighbour in Crossall Avenue when I was a child, and he started taking me out to these places when I was very young, and sort of him pointing out the stuff that you're likely to see in these places kind of stuck with me, and I became interested in birds and animals and geography and all these different things.
Fantastic. He's a bit of a local legend,
yeah,
would you say, as in a wildlife expert, and particularly in the birds that you can see?
Probably the local legend, author, poet, just a very special man.
Yeah, local polymath.
Mm-hmm.
And bird-wise, well, let's make a start. It's a bit cloudy today, and we're not seeing a huge amount just now. But, oh, you've just pointed.
You can see Knockmoy.
Oh, yeah.
It's the second highest hill in Kintyre and kind of dominates Lagibarn. Okay. About 1,500 feet nearly. Which is small in national terms, but not in Kintyre terms.
And doesn't feel small when you're walking up it.
Certainly does not.
Being dragged up by an enthusiastic Kelpie.
It's very steep.
Yeah. And bird-wise, what can we expect or hope to see around here?
Lagibarn, just about anything is possible. I think I've seen pretty much every bird of prey that you're likely to see in the UK at some point at Lagibarn. In the kind of general area, you've got breeding golden eagles. You have visiting, not yet breeding, they used to breed, sea eagles. So you'll see them on occasion. I think it's only a matter of time before they're breeding again down there. So we'd be doing quite well over the rest of the country. We used to have choughs, which is the quite rare version well, I was going to say a version of a crow. It is a crow. It's a quite rare species of crow that nests in sort of wilder areas in the UK. We used to have them at Largy Barton, but they disappeared in the early 80s, early to mid 80s, because, well, it's thought that they disappeared because they stopped grazing cattle on that coast. And they relied on the dung, they were getting amongst the dung to get their food source. So, but I've seen red kites there.
As a non-expert bird person, mm-hmm. I see a lot of buzzards, mm-hmm. and I think I see golden eagles sometimes.
Yeah.
Am I seeing golden eagles? They're massive.
Well, this is the problem, you see, because for someone that's been watching golden eagles and buzzards for most of my life, I can still make the mistake as well. If they're far enough away, you know, they can look very similar. So they have a similar way of soaring. Usually the thing that will give it away is if you're close enough is the size. There is no comparison size-wise. You know, a buzzard's a sort of medium, small to medium-sized raptor. A golden eagle's massive, maybe a six and a half, 7 foot wingspan. Very, very wide in the wings. And they just move differently through the air. A buzzard has got quite a sort of buoyant flight, fair bit of flapping, does a bit of hovering and that. Eagles don't tend to do that, they'll just soar about and occasional wee adjustment to their wing position. Unless the weather's really bad, you'll not really see them flapping their wings up and down.
Right. So basically, if I'm in any doubt, it's probably a buzzard.
Almost certainly. Almost certainly.
I'm fairly sure I've seen them up where we are now, and also around the Torresdale sort of section.
Golden eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you kind of know when you see it. If you're close enough, you kind of know. It's if you're close enough, it's hard to make the mistake. Uh-huh. Also, a buzzard is like almost every buzzard has similar markings on the underside of its wings, and if you see them soaring, you see these markings, you know right away it's a buzzard. Uh-huh. Eagle's just a big flying front door, basically. That's all it is.
Incredible.
And then if you get to see eagle, it's even bigger.
Right. Oh, let's move on to sea eagles then. Mm-hmm. So this is a white-tailed sea eagle, is it?
Yes.
So is that description helpful? Does it genuinely have a white tail?
Well, it's a bit ambiguous because an immature golden eagle, that's a golden eagle that's a year or two old, has a white wedge in its tail.
Right.
So you could make that mistake. But an adult sea eagle is like a pure white tail. So it's like a small sort of stubby white tail with massive big wide wings, and it's kind of light browny sort of tawny colour. And if you see one of them, you know one.
Yeah. They're pretty, maybe not common, but it's frequent to see those at Carradale.
Yeah, there's ones up there now, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Of the way, as well as this bit.
You need to get up and see them for some gum.
Yeah, I've spent quite a lot of time there and I've never seen one. And then as soon as I leave, I get a message from someone going, oh, the sea eagle's out.
Apparently they frequent the fish farm, so.
Yes, that makes sense.
I went to Largy Barton, one of the freezing cold winters. Maybe 2010, 2011, something like that. And the roads were, you couldn't get in for the normal routes. Normally you get in from the South End Road. Couldn't go that way, so I went from Muckrahanish one day. And it was absolutely Baltic, and the ground was frozen solid. I wasn't really expecting to see much, but I hadn't been out with my camera for ages, and I really needed to go. So I went out there, and the first thing I saw when I arrived was a sea eagle, and that was the first one I'd ever saw.
Wow.
And I believe that was the first ever photographed in Kintyre, because when they went extinct, photography wasn't really a thing, especially bird photography. Maybe people that will stand still for 10 minutes the way they used to back in the day, but no, and I couldn't believe it. I was astonished at the size of the bird. And that's the sun that's used to seeing golden eagles. They're massive.
During the Torresdale section, we were talking to Ranger Steve, uh-huh. who helps to manage the land around there, and he's been putting up owl boxes to encourage. I think he was saying tawny owls.
Tawny owls, it'll be, yeah.
Yeah. Is that the main owl you can expect to see around here? And where are we?
in the area we've been discussing, no, you wouldn't really see. Well, you would, I suppose, in amongst the forestry or what's left of it, you might see or hear a tawny owl. But I think the main owl that you'd be looking for out there during the day, anyway, would be a short-eared owl.
Uh-huh.
See them quite regularly on that coast.
And with a short-eared owl, if that's the only thing that you're expecting to see, you'd be hard pressed to confuse that for a different.
Oh, I don't know. Not from a distance. I mean, they're probably to the layperson, they probably look like just another bird of prey. But when they're close up, you know, they've got massive sort of orange eyes, and they've got a sort of particular way of flying as well. But with the way they flap their wings, it's quite sort of slow and deliberate.
And I think I learned once that orange eyes means that they're crepuscular,
right.
Yellow eyes means that they're diurnal, and dark eyes means that they're nocturnal.
Fair enough.
In owl species. Okay.
I didn't know that. But
well, I mean, that could be completely wrong.
No, it sounds about right.
I just like to use the word crepuscular at any yeah. given opportunity.
Yeah, so you see them out there occasionally. And there's also, there's barn owls too, but a barn owl tends to be a more nocturnal bird. I mean, in the winter time or maybe in breeding times, you'll see them in the daylight, but a short-eared owl you can see just at, like, pretty much any time of day, especially like in the winter time or the autumn. Come on.
I think we briefly mentioned hen harriers earlier.
Yep.
How do you identify, what would you be looking for there?
So your hen harriers are a wee bit different. So your male, the male hen harrier is unmistakable. Well, I suppose you could mistake it for a seagull because it's white, basically. It's a kind of light silver. The back of the wings is a light silver colour and the rest is white. There's a bit of faint barn on its tail. They kind of float along above the vegetation. And they're like hunting for lizards, voles, small birds, anything that's basically the right size, you posen. So they float along above the heather, and they're like they're on the lookout for lizards, voles, small birds, anything that's within their size range they can get a grip of. You know, they're not just especially around Kintyre anyway. They're not just sort of in the wilder areas. You can see them in the Aros Moss in the winter time,
mm-hmm.
side of the road, hunting along quite happily. But in the summer months, they're mainly up high, which is where they breed. The female birds are kind of it's got really sort of nice brown sort of cryptic plumage with a straight back white bar between its tail and its back. It's kind of unmistakable when you see that. And also, as you said, it's a diurnal bird, so it's got bright yellow eyes.
Yes.
And they're beautiful. They're probably my favourite bird of prey.
Fantastic. And moving on from that, we with the birds of prey, of mm-hmm. course, you've got the things that they prey on.
Yes.
So it's lovely to see birds of prey, obviously, but
yes.
also quite exciting sometimes to see their prey not at that point being preyed upon. So rabbits, obviously, plenty of those around.
Yeah, plenty of rabbits around.
You get voles.
Yep.
And here, lizards you were mentioning. Do you
yeah, lizards to... are, you know, lizards are pretty common up here. You only tend to see them when it's warm, obviously, because they need the heat to move around quicker.
Uh-huh.
So you only tend to see them when it's warm. But there's lots of them. There's lots of adders as well. Which you've got to be careful of if you have a dog.
Yes, great point.
My dog tends to enjoy poking his nose about the places that are likely to hold adders. Yeah, there's loads of bits and pieces. We've got badgers up here. We've got, obviously, the foxes. And, yeah, loads of different types of deer. You've got your roe deer, your sika deer. And there's one or two reds that I believe escaped a place that were farmed maybe 25, 30 years ago in Kintyre. And I think there's one or two of them still kicking about up here.
Fantastic. Right. And as we get out of breath from this climb, I'm going to ask you your favourite part of the Kintai Way. I'm sort of assuming it's this bit, since this is where you've spent most of your time. And Miley can get a good run off the lead. And
the Kintai Way passes right through an area. On the map, it's called the Eignish, which I believe is Norse. I'm not sure exactly what it means. I probably do know, but I can't remember.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, a bit of research.
Yeah.
Thanks to a Gaelic speaker, we have ascertained that Eignish means stream, sort of river mouth, stream where it comes out to the sea.
So the Eignish is like a ring of crags and cliffs that goes from the sea in a sort of vast semicircle, and it climbs from the sea to about 1,200 feet at its highest point. So it's about 1,200 feet and maybe a quarter of a mile from the sea. So it's very steep, very sort of precipitous, and it's more like being in the Cairngorms than it is like being in the west coast of Scotland. It's just an amazing place, and the Kintai Way runs up right along the top of it. And from there, you can see right up to Mull. You can see Benmore and Mull. You can see Donegal, which is a different country, which I always find bonkers. Aye, and that place is just fantastic. There's a knoll just at the highest point of the Eignish called Binion Fee, which I believe means Peak of the Ravens. And it's almost always got ravens on it. It's bonkers because somebody's named it that hundreds of years ago, and it's still true to this day. And it's just a special place, and totally untouched.
There's a short detour, which we're not going to do today, mm-hmm. Because I'm not fit enough. But down to
Enon's Bay.
Enon's Bay. It's a really special place. I've walked up there quite a few times. And so do you know about the history of that?
I know bits and bobs. My wife and I camped there in May. It was fantastic, atmospheric as usual. Just a wee sort of natural amphitheatre with maybe a quarter mile of sand and shingle. And it's the only kind of sort of accessible bit of the coast, really, between there and probably Cascais, Southend, anyway. So the whole coast is just rocky and precipitous, apart from Craigieoch, which is just before Enon's, and then Enon's. And then after that, it's sort of game over. Enon's is The whole of that coast had small... Hang on just a sec. Come here. Come. Stay. The whole of the coast had small settlements on it, which must have been an incredibly hard life trying to eke out an existence in the winter months. I just can't imagine how they did it. But they did it. So between Macrahanish and the Mull, there's probably as much as a dozen little settlements, and there's very little left now. There's just, I think, the best preserved ones at Craigieoch, which is a mile or two before the Enon's.
Yeah, you can certainly see where they've been, but not a huge amount more.
But the thing was, most of them were dismantled, and the stone was reused as sheep pens, which is a whole other kettle of fish that we'll not get into. And there's a good half a dozen of them the whole way along that coast that you can still see. As I said earlier, at Craigieoch, you can see the foundations of some of the houses, but nowhere else really is there anywhere that's obviously used to be a habitation.
Uh-huh.
But as I said, there was a lot of wee sort of settlements dotted along that coast.
And do you know why they were abandoned? Just too tough, or
I think there's probably a bit of that in it, and I think there's probably the clearances. I mean, they want to make way for sheep. Interesting fact that when they introduced the sheep to the coast, They also introduced goats. And the goats were there to deter the sheep from wandering onto dangerous cliff edges, because the goats are very nimble, obviously, and they can climb, and the sheep are a bit daft, and they'll find themselves in places they can't escape from. So to remove the temptation for the sheep, they introduced the goats, and the goats would keep these areas clear of vegetation to stop the sheep being tempted onto the cliff edges. And the goats that you see out there are descendants of the goats originally introduced for that reason.
That's brilliant. I didn't know that's why they why they introduced the goats. Yeah, along the section, South End particularly, lots of goats.
Yep.
All the way through.
All very inbred as well.
Yeah.
I would assume.
You'll smell them before you see
them.
Yeah,
that's they're very smelly. Not their fault.
No, it's nice to see them.
But it is nice to see them. But they're pretty benign and harmless. They don't really take anything to do with people. I think when they get hungry, they annoy the villagers at McRahanish by coming in and eating the plants. But again, not their fault.
No, doing what goats do.
Absolutely. So we're talking about the Enans.
Yes.
Obviously, there's a grave at Enans.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about the grave. The sailor's grave.
The sailor's grave, aye. Well, we assume it was a sailor. My knowledge of it is just from stuff I've read, obviously, because I'm not quite old enough to remember. I can't remember, 1912, something like that, maybe. Somewhere along them lines, anyway. Maybe a bit later, because I think it was assumed to be a casualty of the First World War. And it was a torso, just a skeleton of a torso that was washed up. Shepherd's dog found it. And the shepherd alerted the police at McRahanish, and a party came round and they buried it. So it was assumed to be a casualty at sea, but it says on it God knows, and that's probably accurate.
Yeah.
So
we don't even know whether it was a war casualty.
No, been in the male or female or anything, you know, just no idea. There's another story about the Enans. You could probably find in one of Angus's books. I'm not actually sure which one. Maybe Kintyre hadn't passed. Something like that. I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning. I'm sure he doesn't. There's a fella that lived in one of the townships at the Enans. Enan Moor and Enan Beg, which is basically means big and small. More for big, big for small. Anyway, there was a fella lived there, and he was a wrong'un, and he was known as John Bawkin Weir. And I'm sure most people listening to this will know what a bawkin is. It's like a Scottish term for a wrong'un, like a nasty person, someone you can't trust. Anyway, he lived at, I want to say Enan Moor, so I hope I'm right. And he decided he wanted to steal some sheep. So he walked over the hills from there to one of the farms on the South End Road. I think it was Weagle. Could be wrong again, but I think it was Weagle. And he rustled himself some sheep. He took them back to the Enans and killed them, hid them under some rocks or in a cave or something like that, I think. And he got caught and he was hanged for it. And I think he might have been the last person hanged in Campbelltown. I think the last person hanged in Campbelltown was John Bawkin Weir from Enans, which I always think is quite a cool story.
Yeah.
But aye, hanged for stealing a few sheep to feed your family.
Yeah. And presumably you can still hear him walking down the gates of sheep.
Yeah, we could do that. We were camping there in May. There was we were just settling down in the tent. There was a road here started barking not far behind the tent. And it's fair to say we've bricked ourselves. or you hear the seals howling. Or, you know, just strange noises, or a barn owl screeching or something like that. It's,
things that you're not used
to. It's a different place at night.
As we know, the west coast of Scotland, you can get all the seasons in quick succession.
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah. As I walk along here without my coat.
Looks like a tornado, actually, next way there.
A bit, yeah.
Our walk to Lenin's Bay started from Ballygrogan Car Park. We walked through the farm, up the hill, passing cattle on the way. The terrain en route was manageable and I was surprised how quick the walk actually took. As a child, I remember walking that route and thought how long it was. The Kintyre Way markers helped keep us on track. We couldn't help stopping for a few breaks to admire the amazing scenery, views of the islands and the wild goats. The descent into the Enns Bay itself was fun and we enjoyed walking the shoreline listening to all the different sounds of the sea. We explored a small boat that had been washed up and spent some time at the grave of the unknown sailor. Scrambling up the hill is not for the faint-hearted, it really was tough. Walking back to Ballygrogan, we hugged the coastline and diverted left to take a look at Craddock Bay in all its glory. Such a beautiful part of the world. Just a pleasure and a great day's walk.
That was Linda Wallace, and before that, Jimmy MacDonald. Thanks, Jimmy. Now we have Liz Ness talking about her experiences on this section of the way.
My favourite part of the Kintyre Way, I would say, is the last section, or the section from Macrahanish to Southend. I still have unfinished business with this section. It was a very challenging section, but had all sorts of different terrains in it. Really interesting section. Fabulous views of the end of Kintyre that made you feel like you were on the end of the world. And then seeing some wild goats was just amazing. It was like an added bonus. But we got a little bit lost and we didn't complete the section because we ran out of time and we missed cake at Moonroy. So I want to tackle this section again and not make the mistake of trying to go over the heather fields where we got a bit stuck. It was a really hot day as well. So we ran out of water and yeah, we were exhausted, but challenging, but absolutely beautiful and really rewarding. Lots of different terrains, amazing views, the mist rolling in from the sea. It's a really memorable day, despite the trauma of missing cake and getting lots of ticks because we were in the heather and trying to go the wrong way. It's on my list to do that one again. Absolutely love it. I love all of them. Love all of the sections. There's actually only the other one from Macrahanish, from Southend to Campbelltown, which I've not done so far. And the others are all beautiful, but there's something about being right at the end of Kintyre, up on that high hill with the views, the mist. I mean, it was a hot sunny day, but the mist was still there and it was just absolutely stunning. And you felt like you were on the edge of the world. It was fantastic.
Hi, my name's Rupert Williams and I come from Dundee in the east coast of Scotland. I did the Kintyre Way in July 2023, and I did it over 7 days, camping, walking consecutive days. I think one of the highlights for me in doing the way, you know, day after day, was that constant zigzagging between coasts, between the east facing coast onto the Kilbrannan Sound and then getting onto the Atlantic west coast. I think that's a really special part of the walk, and then appreciating the hinterland sort of in between these two coasts. You know, the roads generally run on the coasts. You don't really get a sense of that middle of the mull unless you're on foot. But I think the highlight really of that walk has to be that final section going from north to south, which is the south end to Macrahanish section. It really feels like proper walking territory. You're off the roads, you're not on a track, you're on paths up hills, first of all through that incredible nature reserve, and you can really see the extent of the mole proper, the Mother of Kintyre, the hills stretching off into the distance, and then coming onto the coasts, seeing Ireland across the water. And the day I did it, it was lovely sunny weather with boats in the water, and the water was turquoise, the sand was, you know, pristine, there wasn't any waves, there wasn't any swells, it was just this beautiful ocean. So going up and down those paths along the cliff, it's a really, really special end to the walk, coming into Macrahanish at the end and being able to jump into the sea and bathe some very, very weary feet is a really special part of the walk. So that last section of the walk, I think, really is the highlight for me.
The descent from Lagibán is a fairly steep zigzag down. Be sure to enjoy the views over Islay and Dhura while you pause to catch your breath. You'll then enter Ballygrogan farmland, bringing you to a fairly long spell on a rough track through sheep grazing and moorland. The track is often boggy in places, so keep your wits about you to avoid getting wet feet. As you get closer to your destination, the track gets wider and more substantial, eventually bringing you through Ballygrogan Farm and past Ballygrogan Cottage. From here, you have elevated views into Macrahanish, your final destination, and across the long, sandy Westport Beach. Another thing that the West Coast is great for is surfing. I went to take a look.
We are out again, Jed and I. So I tell him every time I say something, he stops. As if to be like, what are you talking to? We're walking along Westport Beach. So this isn't strictly on the Kintyre Way, but once you finish down in Macrahanish, you are pretty much at one end of a 2 or 3 mile long sandy beach. Beautiful, fine, white and yellow sand, absolutely gorgeous. You've sort of picture perfect beach. You could be in the Caribbean here. The sea is emerald and blue in the sunshine today. It's a beautiful day today. A little bit windy, but glorious. I can see out, if I look back, I can see towards Northern Ireland. And then, of course, out to my left here towards the Paps of Dhura and Islay. And then further up the coast, you can see Gia. You can just see the wind turbines over on Gia there. A couple of boats out. There's a few dog walkers, but how many can I see? I can see one person in front of me, one person behind me. And this is on a stretch of 2 or 3 miles. So, and this is busy. So normally it's completely deserted. It's a wonderful just stroll, however far you want to go along here. And it's going to bring us up to Pete Surf School, which is what it sounds like. It's a surfing school run by a guy called Pete. And we're going to go and talk to Pete.
This morning's conditions are pretty good, to be honest, for learning. So we've got probably a 1 to 2 foot wave, which might increase as the tide drops. That should be low by about 1:20. Low energy means low rips, which means nice, safe conditions, a slight onshore wind. We're all good to go.
Lovely. And what's so great about Westport as a place to surf?
Well, it catches the big Atlantic swells. They come through the window between the south of Islay and the northern north of Ireland. So we just get that lovely big Atlantic swell coming through, long travelled waves that make lovely waves when they get to the beach. Carradale, Torresdale, beautiful beaches. Not great for surfing generally because they're on the east side and they don't catch the Atlantic swell. But just occasionally you get a storm swell coming up the Irish Sea and it delivers something to those spots, but they are so good for swimming and snorkeling and just generally having good fun on.
We are walking down the single track road. Come on. No, come on. No, sweetheart, you're not going in. We're walking down the single track road from Ballygrogan Cottage, which is where Jed and I used to live. So he is, I don't know how he does it, but the blind dog knows where he is and is trying to go in. You know, we haven't lived there for years. We are coming to the end of the Kintyre Way now. Just got to walk down into Macrahanish. It's been such a wonderful project, walking the Kintyre Way. It's walks that we've done time and time again, but never sort of really concentrating on doing the whole lot over the course of a few weeks. Some of the sections we've had to break up. Some of the sections we've sort of started from one end, gone in, gone out again. But it's really versatile, and I can imagine if the old dog here was a bit younger, doing the whole lot in one go would be such a wonderful experience. You're seeing all the terrains. You're seeing, well, we've certainly experienced all the weather conditions. Not quite snow, but, you know, give it time. So today it's a little bit breezy, but it's sunny. It's beautiful. Anyway, this is the last walk of this sort of magnitude that I think Jed and I will do together. He's struggled a little bit in places. But I'm very glad that I've got these memories, come on, of me and my best pal covering all these miles together. Me marvelling at the views over the islands and the moors, and Jed constantly trying to veer off the path to investigate interesting smells. And I can confirm there are a lot of interesting smells on the Kintyre Way. Possibly an angle that the Kintyre Way committee haven't really thought of about promoting. Quite a niche market, but Jed confirms great smells. I can see, just coming across here, and I can see the end point. We've got another, I think I just passed a wave marker, which was 3 miles. So we've got another sort of 2.5 miles down, but it's all downhill. I know this bit very well, having used to live up here. So we're going to wander down, and I think we'll do the end bit on our own. Thank you for joining me on our walk along the Kintyre Way. And I hope you're able to do the walk as well and enjoy it as much as we have. Signing out.
The Kintyre Way is maintained by volunteers and kind donations from locals and businesses. Thanks to the individual supporters who donate money and to the business supporters. West Lough Shores Holiday Park, Skipness Smokehouse, Ballinakil Country House, Ronican House, Kirkland Bed and Breakfast, Ferry Farm Tainlone, Tainlone Stores, Bruni Bags, Ben and Turk Distillery and Torresdale Estate, Iffordale Farm and Bunkhouse, Delwood Hotel, Heather Gillis Art, Sarah Morton Photography, Campbelltown Backpackers, Anne Stewart Knitwear, Absolute Escapes, Macrahanish Holiday Park, The Wayfarers, Words HQ, and a special thank you to Strange Crazy for use of their music throughout this podcast.